Korzenowski in for Chad Hartman today. It's always good to come in after a Vikings win. Are you a Vikings fan?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm a big Vikings fan. Going
grew
back
up
to,
every Sunday, brother and my dad watching the game. My dad would get mad and threaten to go down to the stadium and either kick Jerry Burns or Denny Green right in the butt for some stupid decision. We thought he'd actually do it till we grew old enough and wise. He's not actually going to do it.
You know, my dad, you know who the player he hated the most during my youth? He happened to be a number one draft pick and a first ballot Hall of Famer. Ron Yeary, okay? One of the greatest left tackles. Because he would get a holding penalty, and he goes, he's not any good because all he ever does is hold, and he gets called for it. I'm going, he's the first pick in the draft. I said, he ended up being a first ballot Hall of Famer. Matthew Collar once had me on and wanted me to name my five favorite Vikings. And, of course, I had Ron Yeary on there because I wanted to tell that story that my dad hated him. But I mean, I've got some of my dad's tendencies, although not as much. And now that I do the show from noon or from 10 to noon on Sundays, I got to set the DVR, so by the time I get home, I'm like an hour behind, which is great, because guess when you catch up? If you just go through, you catch up right when it ends, so instead of spending 3 hours watching the game, you only see 2 hours watching it, but you have to stay off your phone. Like Tom Linneman was humming me with something yesterday, something we talked about, and I think I know what it was, because he comes on and picks games with me, and I took the Eagles plus +3. They're losing by 2.
Yeah.
And then they're going to kick the field goal. I go, I got it, right? If they make the field goal, they win. If they miss the field goal, they cover the 3. And then it was blocked and returned for a touchdown. And they lost by 9. Okay. I'm guessing that's when he was buzzing me when I did it. But it's so funny. If the NFL, if you ever watch Red Zone, do you have Red Zone and watch it?
I don't. No.
It's insane how these games end and insane what happens and insane that. Yesterday, the Vikings could not have looked worse than they did against the Falcons, and they really looked pretty bad against the Bears, too. And it wasn't all J.J.'s fault. It was some J.J.'s fault. J.J. McCarthy, not Justin Jefferson. Although the first game, Justin Jefferson had a bad game, too. Dropped a couple passes, ran some bad routes, fell down right before J.J. threw it. He didn't have a good game, and he said he didn't. He had a good game yesterday, great game. But who would have thought what happened would happen, right? I mean, that Isaiah Rodgers has maybe the greatest single game in NFL history for a defensive player. And and just the first half. He did it. And they were remarkable plays. And he is remarkably fast. I mean, he got him and just gone. I mean, and
the fumble recovery was unbelievable.
He got down on the ground and up so fast, it's like it almost didn't even happen. Mm-hmm. Most guys would just fall on it. He like slid over. That is called a great athlete. I mean, that is a great athlete. And then he knocked the ball away from T. Higgins down in the corner of the end zone. And I saw he had the highest pro football ranking since Pro Football Focus has been doing it. And I don't know how long that is. So you can't say it's the best ranking ever because for many years there was no Pro Football Focus. 99.9. And I guess I'm wondering what you got to do to be 100. You know, really? I mean, I'm not going to quibble.
Yeah, but catch a little out route in front of them.
Yes, somebody must have caught some pass in front of him at some point, you know, if 99.9. But it just shows you how football can just change all the time. I love ESPN when they're again, who's your MVP after 3 games? I'm going,
who cares?
There's 14 games. There's injuries. Almost everybody gets hurt. The teams will look completely different at the end of this year. But if you're a Vikings fan, that is what you expected to see yesterday. Now, granted, Jake Browning, although I remember the last time we saw Jake Browning, he was bringing him back from 17-3 and beat the Vikings in one of the Nick Mullins games. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that game? I still like Nick Mullins. I don't know why they got rid of him, because he's going to throw for 350 yards. But he's going to throw 3 interceptions.
Right. I think that's why they got rid of him.
You know, well, it is. But I remember there was a game, you know, I think last year, but a year when they were good, so not 23, but there was a game where Kirk got hurt for like a play, and it's like fourth down, and you're their own 40-yard line. It's late in the game. Mullins comes in, hits Aaron Jones for 15, walks up the field. Kirk comes back on. They scaled it. You know, they end up winning the game. Might have been the Seahawks game, even, where we won late. Or maybe it was with Darnold. But tremendous, tremendous game yesterday for the Vikings. And it reminded me of a game back when I was doing the radio at 1500. And again, I'd come home late. I would until noon, and I'd come home, and you're watching it. And they had two TDs. They had two special teams TDs. It was 2014 against Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers. And you know who had the two blocks? Adam Thielen had one of them. Still playing for the Vikings.
That's right.
And that was when he was a special teams player. He didn't really get on the scene until either the end of 14 or 15. And Everson Griffin had one as well. So it was kind of like that, because all of a sudden, and it was very close together. So when you had the two returns, the interception and then the fumble, which was very close together within one or two possessions, it kind of, and it just blows the game open. And they won that game like 31 to 13 or 38 to 13, something like that.
Well, it's amazing. You know, you spend a whole week talking about the quarterback situation, backup versus backup. What's going to happen? What's going to happen? Well, I don't think anybody predicted three lost fumbles and a pick six
and then,
from the Bengals.
No.
It's absurd.
Well, and then one of the fumbles, the guys, they're running up. They're running out the clock at the end of the half, and the guy just fumbles it.
Yes.
He just drops it. And Zach Taylor, is that the coach's name? He's interviewed at halftime, and he you could just see he was exasperated. He goes, "We're trying to run out the clock."
Yes.
And he drops it.
What can I do?
And they get a field goal off of that one. I mean, when it's bad, it's bad. It's like Jerry Burns said the speech that he gave when he goes, "I'm not going to call out, but the guy's got to pick up the ball." Then he called everybody out.
It ain't Bob Schnelker's fault.
Yeah, so it reminded me of that, and I think I'm still in on JJ, but now it's going to be an interesting dynamic. Look, Carson Wentz did what he needed to do yesterday, right?
And, yeah, he was good enough.
And Chip Scoggins, who's going to be on at 2 o'clock, will be going to talk about it. He wrote a column on it, but he didn't look particularly. He wasn't exactly zipping the ball around there. He was kind of fluttering and floating and wobbly, but getting it out of his hands in enough time, getting enough traction. And look, they're playing the Bengals, who I think are not very good. I mean, but how about Darisaw yesterday? Trey Hendrickson, I think he led the league in sacks last year or was right up there. He didn't get close to Carson Wentz. He did, because I watched Darisaw almost every play, and it was like child's play.
It's unbelievable.
It's like he's not even trying. It's like, come on. Come on, you got this. There's got to be something more to this than that.
Give me a swim move. Something.
It's just something. Yeah. I mean, and this is Trey Hendrickson, who's good. And I'm sure JJ is sitting there going, "I wish I had Trey." I mean, I think we know right now. I think the most important player on the Vikings offense, the most important player, is Darisaw.
Because the drop
from Darisaw to the next guy is precipitous. If JJ gets hurt, remember a couple of years ago he missed like six games and they won like all of them or five of them. The Vikings have other receivers. Naylor's playing really well. Addison's coming back. You know, and JJ's for sure, he's the best receiver in the NFL, and he's an all pro, and Darisaw hasn't made all pro yet. But for the Vikings, the drop off from Darisaw to the next guy is precipitous.
Yes.
And they can survive a few games without JJ. And now we see we got a competent backup quarterback, or if JJ McCarthy comes back and he gets hurt, we have a quarterback who's at least okay, the backup quarterback. So, but Darisaw he's the most important guy in that whole team. The most important guy. If they keep him all year, I think they got a pretty good chance to be whatever we thought they would be. Now, when we come back, another football stadium had a big event in it yesterday, the Charlie Kirk Memorial. And there were some very interesting things said, some very Christian-like things said. And I mean that in the most positive way possible by Charlie Kirk's wife. And then some kind of un-Christian-like statements coming from you-know-who. All right, this song has a special place in my heart. Korzenowski and for Hartman. I was driving.
Running down a dream, Tom Peck.
So I still... I've had Saab convertibles for years. I've got one now. It's got 195,000 miles on it. I love it. I've had convertibles forever. And I was driving back. I played golf that day, and I'm driving back home, and I'm going down 394, like right through St. Louis Park, right through that where the West End is now.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful day, and I got the top down, and I've got my DVD player, not DVD, CD player.
Yeah.
The car is a CD player. I haven't used it in years. I wonder if it works. And all of a sudden, I'm just flying down the road. There's no traffic. It's a Sunday afternoon. I see the lights go on. I look down, and I was going 94 miles an hour.
Uh-oh.
The guy pulls me over, and he goes, I turned it down. But the song is still going, right, because I turned it down. And the cop comes in and goes, "What are you doing going 94 miles an hour?" And I thought, I can't talk my way out of this one. So I just took the speaker, and I turned it up. And I put my hands up, and the guy – still gave me a ticket for like $250, but on the ticket he wrote, "Good attitude."
Well, that's nice.
Because I wasn't good. I mean, I'm going 94.
Yes.
I needed to get a ticket. If I was a Viking, I'd be suspended.
No, if you're a Viking, you would have said your dog is sick.
That's right. Jordan Addison coming back this week. I'll say this. Charlie Kirk And, you know, there's a lot of things that I don't like that he does, and we've talked about that, and I'm not going down that road again, but that guy has a major following. I mean, to think that about 200,000 people show up to this thing is what they said. And I'm sitting there going, oh, because, you know, I'm not a MAGA lover, right? So I'm sitting there thinking, oh, they're exaggerating this, you know. Maybe there's only 50,000 people. No. It seats about 73,000, but that's in the stands. They had a bunch of people on the field too, mm-hmm. or the floor, whatever it is. And they said that 200,000 people registered, and they had to turn away a bunch of people because they had it packed to the gills. So there was for at least 90 to 100,000 people there, and several hundred thousand more people, or at least another 100,000 people that wanted to be there. So the guy has a serious following, and it was a big deal out there. And, you know, and Charlie Kirk, you know, a lot of what he says is that he's a Christian. I believe he's a Christian. I heard somebody say on Twitter, yeah, somebody said that a follower of Charlie Kirk said, if Charlie Kirk was alive back in Jesus' time, he would be the 13th apostle, apostle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about that. I don't know. Some of the things he says, I don't know about that. But Charlie Kirk does have a very strong following, and it's a very Christian-based thing. And yesterday, his wife, Erica, and this is really touching to me. Erica fought back tears as she appeared on stage to thunderous applause. In a stirring moment of clemency, she announced that she had forgiven her husband's killer. Many in the audience wept. He wanted to save young men just like the one who took his life, she said, taking a pause to gather herself. I forgive him. I forgive him because it's what Christ did and it's what Charlie would do. That's pretty cool. I mean, I got to say that's
it was extremely emotional.
Yes. I mean, that is the teaching of the Bible. It mm-hmm. really is. I think a lot of the MAGA people, a lot of the people that are out there are not really, I don't think Christ would be real pleased with some of the things they do. Okay, I'm just saying that. I mean, I've read the Bible. I used to be kind of a Bible banger when I was younger. I know what it says, and I know what Christ wants you to do and what he talks about. And they don't follow a lot of that stuff. They don't. I mean, saying that you're going after LGBTQ people, you're going after people disabilities. You're not treating the poor very well. The Big Beautiful Bill is taking money and programs away from the poor, and you're putting them into the rich people. I don't think that's what Jesus would be in favor of. But I don't know Erica Kirk, so I don't know that she does any of those things. I know, but by that line, that is hard to do. And she really, I'm sure she really meant it from what I gathered.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because there's a lot of people when that clip started circulating on social media or whatever. She doesn't mean it. You have no idea what she means. You have no idea what she's been through. You don't know what kind of person she is. You're simply, in this case, likely a lefty who doesn't like Charlie Kirk.
Yeah.
And, no, she can't. Just for once, put the politics aside.
Yes.
And let the widow of a young man who was assassinated at age 31 let her speak.
And you've seen so many people that hold on to their anger or their and that's the next one, Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And I got to give him credit for this. At least he's honest, right? He says he did not hate this is Donald Trump after he came up after she spoke, and she said Trump was. I said he did not hate his opponents. He wanted the best for them. He said this is Trump talking about Charlie. That's where I disagree with Charlie. I hate my opponents, and I don't want what's best for them. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Erica. So he did what he does, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, he played the hits.
He's played the hits. He goes up there, and he's making
lefties,
fun of Biden.
Blah, blah, blah.
And we're going to talk a little bit about the Jimmy Kimmel thing later. But, you know, Jimmy Kimmel said something that was factually incorrect when he said, you know, he's MAGA. There was a lot of speculation that the shooter was MAGA because his family might have been MAGA, but we don't know that he was, or maybe he had been in the past. And they said, a lot of people said that the reason he didn't like Charlie Kirk is he wasn't conservative enough. But these are all speculation, okay? That being said, I mean, that's what he said. But Trump also doesn't have any idea that it's a lefty who did it. But he's saying the same things. But when people say, when Charlie Kirk says, or when Kimmel says, he's MAGA, he was never really a MAGA guy. I don't think.
No,
I don't think there was evidence of it. There was evidence his family was Republican. Okay. But he said it. Okay. And we'll get into that. But Trump has no evidence that it's a lefty that did it. And he says it all the time. But they get mad at Jimmy Kimmel when he says it. When Donald Trump is the president, a little more of an important person than a late night talk show host that they go crazy over. So we'll talk about that a little bit later as well. But he played the hits, but it was a touching moment. And it was that's. And you got to give it up. I mean, I don't think to get 200,000 people to show up when all people are doing is giving speeches because they you mean that much to them. So Charlie Kirk obviously meant a lot to a lot of people. And he will never he won't be forgotten. It's a different cat. I don't know if there's ever been somebody like him who's not an elected official, doesn't really have a TV show or anything. He's just built this following. It's kind of a he's really found something there. And the Democrats, if they want to get young voters back, they better probably look at some of the things he said and might want to consider it. I don't know. We'll see. When we come back, Farm Aid. Did you catch any of Farm Aid?
I watched a good portion of it.
I did, too.
Yeah.
Well, one, I'm a huge Neil Young fan. So, okay. But by the time Dylan came on and Willie, I'm 65. I fell asleep. So we'll get maybe I can get it. But it was great. It really was. It would have been really fun to go. We're going to talk to John Bream. Great review with him and Chris Riemenschneider.
Riemenschneider.
They really great the article. You almost feel like you were there when you see it. Talk to him when we come back. Korzenowski in for Chad. I have a Sunday show out here from 10 a.m. to noon. You can listen in if you want to hear me talk about sports and not so much about Trump. By the way, that last thing I made, but I thought nice comments about Charlie Kirk, so I get destroyed by the people on the left, and the people on the right didn't like it either. So I guess I did something right there. I must have. But something that everybody seemed to enjoy was a Farm Aid, and John Breen was there, and he wrote a great piece along with Chris in the Star Tribune, and I watched quite a bit of it on CNN because I'm a huge Neil Young fan, and I'm still bitter when I had tickets for Neil Young back when I was in college and he didn't show, which he was known to do, so I've never seen him live. But it was great, and I really enjoyed Farm Aid. And why did it take 40 years to get here, John? Do you have any idea?
Well, you know, they looked at it's got to be an outdoor space, okay? Mm-hmm. So for a long time, our biggest stadium was the Metrodome.
Yep.
Now we have U.S. Bank Stadium. So they had to be in an outdoor stadium.
Got it.
So different parts of the country bidding for it.
Yep. Now, had you been to Farm Aid before?
I was at the very first one at University of Illinois Stadium, and then I went to one at Iowa State University Stadium.
Now, and as this one went, what were your overall thoughts on it? Because I thought, first of all, I just thought it was great. And I like seeing the old guys, you know, and it's great to see, they can still rock. And what was your highlight, do you think?
Well, you know, I was like, wow, this was pretty extraordinary. And I was trying to think, is there been anything better in Minnesota? And, you know, people ask me the cliche question, what's the best concert you've ever been to? And the answer used to be 2004, Vote for Change. It was Bruce Springsteen, Neil Young, John Fogerty, REM, and Bright Eyes. And when Bruce Springsteen can be upstaged by Neil Young, when they're jamming together, you know, you've seen a beyond extraordinary show. But I think Farm Aid 40 might have topped it simply because it was longer and you had all these new artists that you didn't know. And they were so fabulous. They were so excellent. And the thing was uniformly consistent. Everyone was passionate. Everyone gave quality performances. Maybe Kenny Chesney, the country star, did a little bit of a star turn, was blowing kisses and stuff like that, which seemed a little, you know, out of form for this event. But it was pretty spectacular musically anyway. And the weather was pretty good until it started to drizzle a little bit, sprinkles here and there in the evening during Neil Young. But you mentioned Neil Young.
Yeah.
I want to say this, Corzo. I watched part of it, or taped it on CNN, and I watched part of that last night. Neil Young live was so focused and ferocious, and that doesn't come through on the CNN broadcast. You don't get the electricity, the physicalness, the way it hits you when they were there.
Yep.
And on the other hand, the Bob Dylan thing was so much better on TV than it was in person because you could see him more clearly on TV, a little bit anyway, and you could hear him clearly. Whereas in a stadium, it was a little bit more challenging. It's always challenging with Dylan.
Now, I'm assuming that the stadium was full. Is that right?
There was 37,000 people, 36 and some change with official tickets. Yeah, it was full. I mean, they blacked out a lot of what I would have called good seats, but they claimed that you couldn't see from there because of the big video screens next to them.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, amazing to get have Dylan and Neil Young, and I mean, I really felt bad because I was watching it with my wife, but I fell asleep after Neil Young, so I didn't get to see Dylan, and I didn't get to see Willie. And from your write-up, Willie apparently was again wonderful, and he's beloved. Obviously, he and Neil Young and Mellencamp started this thing, and now they're joined by Dave Matthews as well. By the way, I thought Dave Matthews, my wife loves Dave Matthews, and I thought his performance was really outstanding as well and really emotional.
Yeah, I thought it was excellent, and you know, he was performing with Tim Reynolds,
yes,
his guitar player, and they often do duo shows. But then they were joined by a violin player from Lucas Nelson's band. And that just added a whole different texture and energy and real emotional, you know, feel to it that you don't always get. I mean, here's performers who are doing 30-minute sets. Neil Young got to go a little bit longer because, well, he's Neil Young and he's one of the co-founders. And then Willie did 55 minutes. Which is extraordinary because he was not expected to play that long. And for the performers to get so passionate and so emotional in such a, you know, concise, restrained period was really impressive.
It shows you that these guys, they really mean it. They really mean that they want to help this cause and that they're willing to do it. I presume none of these people get paid for this. I'm guessing they probably get their expenses covered. But is that the right presumption?
I talked to Mellencamp last week, and I did an interview with him. And I said, "Does anyone get paid?" And he's a board member since mm-hmm. day one. And he said, "I've never heard on any conference call that anyone gets paid." I said, "Not even their expenses or anything." He says, "No, everyone comes on their own."
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. And there's the new. And when I first started watching, it was the who was the woman that the country singer who's the new member of the board from 2021? That
Margo Price.
Yes, and boy, that was really good too. I got to say, I had never really heard of her before. That was kind of when we first started watching it, but I thought that was a great performance as well.
Yes, and hers was very political. You know, she did the Woody Guthrie song about migrants who died in a plane crash. And then she did this song. She's the last performer on Jimmy Kimmel Live before it was taken off the air.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
She did a song on Kimmel that she did the other day, "Don't Let the Bastards Get You Down."
Yep. Yeah, she played that was very, very good. Now, you also got to experience something that if you're a sports fan, you've experienced it, which is that stadium is beautiful once you get into it. And it's, you know, beautiful views of the skyline and it just it's but it is the concession areas, the restrooms and the concourses are not nearly big enough for when they get 50,000 people in there, right?
Not only that, they weren't well stocked with supplies, and they didn't have a big enough staff to handle that crowd. No, that was a big problem, and a lot of complaints about long lines, expensive food, quality of food. I didn't get to have dinner until about 10 o'clock, and I took the shortest line, and I will say that the bun and the ketchup tasted good. I'm not sure what the veggie burger in between was, but
I'll tell you on an aside, and I used to go to a lot more concerts than I do now, but my wife and I went up a month or so ago because I went to see KC and the Sunshine Band, okay? I love KC and the Sunshine Band, so it was good to see them. But the Ledge is one of the best places I've ever seen a concert because it's free parking. It's really easy to get into, and the opposite of U.S. Bank Stadium because, one, it's outside and there's a lot of room. But I've never seen a place that has so many restrooms and so many concession stands all within easy distance, and you don't even have to leave where you still can watch the show while you do it. I'm sure you've been there. It's really a tremendous place.
Yeah, it is. And the other thing is, Scott, they have permanent restrooms. They have some portable toilets, but they also have permanent restrooms, which is really important for women.
Yep. It's a great, great thing. Well, thanks for joining us, John. I've always wanted to talk to you. I've read you for years. Nice to meet you over the airwaves, and maybe we'll talk again sometime.
All right. Thanks, Scott. Take care.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye. John Bream, the legend, John Bream, the legend. What's the best concert you've ever seen, Mr. Harrigan?
I always go back to Weezer and Foo Fighters together at the X when I was in college, probably 04 or something like that. And that was, I was a massive Weezer fan at the time. They were my favorite band ever. And so I saw there was an opener, and then Weezer came, Foo Fighters closed out the show. I was front row, right in the center. We had, you know, snuck our way up there with my buddy, who's a lot bigger and more physical than me, to get us up at the front. And, you know, I got
Where was it at?
It was at the X.
Okay.
Sorry, not the X anymore. Grand Casino Arena, formerly XL Energy Center. And I got my butt kicked as people were, you know, shoving and, you know, having a great time. And I'm not exactly the biggest guy. So I faded back then once Foo Fighters started, and they blew the doors off the place. Like, I was a moderate Foo Fighters. Yeah, I think they're okay. After that, it was, oh, my goodness gracious, what have I been missing?
I will tell you, when my wife and I went to U.S. Citizens Festival, it's a left-wing organ. They have these concerts in Central Park every year, and they raise money for consciousness and world citizens, where they wanted to have world citizens, you know, the opposite of what a lot of people in this country think. But they just have all these incredible acts there. And so we wanted to see, the reason we went is we wanted to see Cat Stevens, because we were listening to him. And I said, and she goes, where's he playing? It's the U.S. It's Global Citizens Festival. Let's get a ticket. And we're in Central Park. Well, we get there. No booze. That was a drawback. I wish I would have known that going in to be at a concert and not having to get a beer somewhere. But one of the bands that played, and I had heard of Metallica, right? And I knew that they were very philanthropic group.
Yep.
And we're sitting in the middle of Central Park, and we're a long way away, and there's this guy sitting there. He's probably 40 years old, and he's got, like, girls, and there's, like, when Rihanna comes on, and all these other backs are on, and they're all, and he's, like, sleeping. He's not even paying attention. His wife is there. The girl. All of a sudden, Metallica comes on, and this guy's alive. and they did four songs, and I became an instant Metallica fan. It was ridiculous how good they were. And you know, they were a long way away, but they started with the do 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 do. You just see him, and he's like looking at the camera. So that was maybe my most surprising concert, that where I was kind of surprised how much I liked it.
It's a great billing, Metallica and Cat Stevens on the same stage.
And Kendrick Lamar was later. Rihanna was there.
Really? Wow.
Eddie Vedder.
Hey, this couldn't have been too long
ago. We're going to California this weekend to see Eddie Vedder out in the Ohana Festival. My wife loves Eddie Vedder.
I'm sorry.
She would leave me for Eddie Vedder. She would leave me for Eddie Vedder. She would leave me for Dave Matthews, she told me when we were watching the other night.
Okay.
But, you know, hey, why not? I mean, I said, I guess why wouldn't you? Right?
Good luck, honey.
Anyway, when we come back, I'll tell you my worst one. We went and saw, I love country music. I love really all kinds of music, but I really love Trace. Trace Adkins. Loved him. Chrome, one of my favorite songs. And he's got some great songs. The Badonka Donk. I hate to watch you go, but I love to watch you leave. I mean, stuff like that. This is great country music, right? And we went and saw him up at one of the casinos up north there, maybe Mille Lacs. And I've never seen a guy mail it in. First of all, he goes, I'm doing the Grand Ole Opry tomorrow, so I got to cut this short. And he had like no energy, nothing. He just wanted to get out of there and go to the Grand Ole Opry. So yeah, that was pretty bad. Did you ever have one like that?
I don't see enough concerts to have a really terrible one. There's nothing that comes to mind where I left really disappointed.
You know, I did think about going to Farm Aid, but I think the tickets were like $450. I wasn't that much that. But to see Neil Young, it would have been good. Interesting what he said about Neil Young. Yeah, Neil Young is still, he's still the man. When we come back. Let's see if I can remember. I think we're talking to Reed Forgrave. Am I right?
He's at the top of the hour.
Oh, coming up. Oh, stay a little longer. Star Tribune. Case. I got the. I'm with you. I've lost track of the time. Coming up, the Star Tribune reported Sunday that a caseworker notified the state more than 2 years ago that the persons indicted just last week were defrauding the state way back when, yet the state did next to nothing about it. We'll talk about that when we return here. Korzenowski in for Chad Hartman on 830 WCCO. It's time for the Lindus Construction Time Check. Time to give your home a new look. Siding installation labor is 75% off through September 30th. Your Lindus time is 12:51. 12:51 here at WCCO 830. And as we said, coming into the break, there's been a lot of news about fraud in the state of Minnesota. We, of course, did the Feeding Our Family fraud. And then just this week, we see another fraud where they were supposed to help stabilize people in where they stay in the homes. And again, it's the feds. It's the feds are always the ones that are catching the Minnesota fraud, not the state. And there was a story in yesterday's Star Tribune that says 2 years before the U.S. Department of Justice, this is what we were just talking about that happened earlier this week, or late last week, indicted Christopher and Emmanuel Folliday for allegedly defrauding the state. The Minnesota Department of Human Services was warned their company was engaging in potentially fraudulent activities. An unidentified caseworker notified the state in September 2023, more than 2 years ago, that Philotacare LLC was falsifying timesheets to receive payments through the Minnesota's Housing Stabilization Services Program, according to state records. The caseworker also claimed the company was evasive and non-responsive to questions. These suspicious actions, poor communication, and lack of transparency make us suspect Philotacare may be engaging in fraudulent billing practices, the complaint said. The Department of Human Services, though, never investigated the complaint, referring it instead to an outside Medicaid administrator. The DHS continued making payments to Philotacare for nearly two more years, shutting them off only after the FBI searched the company's offices in July. Federal prosecutors indicted the Falades on fraud charges for allegedly billing more than $2.1 million in services throughout the program. State data shows the company received more than $700,000 in 2024 after the DHS was made aware of fraud allegations. Neither the Falades attorney nor the company returned messages seeking comment on Friday. Now that, to me, that's egregious. With all the fraud we have in the state, and look, Walls is running around saying we're trying to crack down on the fraud. But as I noted when I was on, I think when I was talking about this last time, yeah. But the state's not the one that's caught the fraud. In other words, the feds are the one catching the fraud. Look, somebody has to commit fraud before you can catch them of doing fraud. So you mean people are going to do fraudulent things, right? But the problem with the state is they're not catching them. They're doing it, and they're not catching it. And in this case, they had a whistleblower say, why don't you check this out? I mean, how difficult would it be to go check that out, especially given the fact that the feds have come on and said for all of these, for Feeding Our Family and for this one, that these are basically, they basically are requiring the people getting the money to just kind of vouch that they're doing it. There's very few safeguards. There's very few guardrails. They say it's rampant for fraud, and then you get a notice from that. I mean, this is a bad look for Walls and the whole state of Minnesota system, that you do not investigate a fraud claim that turned out to be an accurate claim.
Yeah, I mean, we heard it plenty of times, you know, when Feeding Our Future was happening, and, you know, there was obviously plenty of criticism, and, you know, Walls and others would say, look, there was so much federal money that came into the state because of COVID, it was, you know, almost impossible to... Yeah, I get that. It's much more difficult. There's going to be more fraud when all this money was just, you know, thrown at every state for, you know, name your program. Let's, you know, we were trying to help get through a pandemic. But man, it's case after case keeps coming. And you're right. You know, it seems like the feds are keeping track of it. And we're hearing, yeah, we're on top of it. But are you really on top of it? And I mean, there's no way this doesn't stick to Tim Walz in some way. Does it cost him the election? I don't know about that, because we love voting for Democrats in the state. But, you know, every word you are going to hear out of the GOP candidate, whoever that is, you know, every other word is going to be about fraud in the state. And they should.
In fact, Tim Walz, when he announced he was running for governor for a third time that day and says, I'm going to crack down on fraud. And then this is when this indictment shows up on the same newspaper.
Yeah, it was in the ad.
And Scott Jensen said, wow, isn't that just like Tim Walz? He says he's stopping fraud. And then on the same day, there's this fraudulent thing. And now, 2 days later, we learned that they were warned. The state service was warned about this by a whistleblower. Mm-hmm. And they said, Medicaid, give it to some. That's your job. And so, you know, when I was on DeRusha's show last week, and we were talking about, you know, by that time, it looked like Walz was going to run and going for the third term. And no governor, I think, in the state of Minnesota has won a third term. And I don't know how many of them even tried to. But when you get to the third term, you know, you got a lot of baggage.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of baggage, you know, good and bad. Okay. And there's a lot of bad for Walz that if the Republicans get, I think if the Republicans got a more centered candidate rather than, you know, Scott Jensen, who was a little off the rails there for a while.
Oh, yeah.
But if they get a real, you know, if they get a more conservative, liberal, a more centrist person.
Yes.
I think Walz is vulnerable. And
common sense conservative, one might say.
Yeah. And yes, I do. And I'm concerned that, being a Democrat, I'm concerned that this is a similar thing to Biden. right? That Biden was not really, he had a different problem. His problem was he was old and people didn't think he was with it. But Walz has a problem that there's been this rampant fraud, and the feds are having to bail him out on the rampant fraud, and he's himself is not doing it, or his organizations aren't doing it, his departments aren't doing it. And so that's going to be front and center for whoever runs against Walz for the third term.
Yeah, and it should be. He's absolutely vulnerable there, and you know, he's going to get the lefties. He's not going to get the righties. There's a lot of people in the middle that probably, yeah, kind of like Tim Walz, but they also might just be Walzed out, and that might have nothing to do with the fraud, but it has to do with 8 years. You've seen him. You've now seen him on the national stage, obviously running for the VP spot. Perhaps they are just looking for an alternative, looking for somebody else to vote for, because they say, yeah, let's just make a change just to make a change, right?
I think there was a story in the Wall Street Journal that talked about that, and Walz kind of says, you know, I'm kind of sick of myself. I mean, he gets that.
Yeah.
He gets that maybe it's running the way. Even though Chad's not here, we're still going to do what?
Overrated, underrated, properly rated.
When we come back after the break, Korzenowski in for Hartman here on 830 WCCO.